Thank you for joining us today. We have Jocelyn and Lisa. Lisa is a nurse practitioner in Arizona, and Jocelyn is a registered nurse. They work with an outreach program for neonatal abstinence scoring. Lisa and Jocelyn kind of see families through the neonatal abstinence journey. Welcome, Jocelyn and Lisa.
Thank you for having us.
Do you guys, will you just kind of start out by letting listeners know what kind of sparked your interest in the neonatal abstinence outreach program?
Yeah.
Let's go. Go ahead, Lisa.
So this is Lisa, and I can start. I very much was like, shared the feelings that a lot of nurses experienced when caring for infants with neonatal abstinence syndrome and their families. It was frustrating. These babies are difficult to manage. The families are frustrated with us and we're frustrated with them. And it wasn't always my first choice as a nursing assignment when I would come in or, you know, working with them as a nurse practitioner. In 2016, Dr. Matt Grossman had a webinar that I actually missed, and our chief neonatologist saw it and was in awe that babies could be sent home within 6 days, babies with moderate withdrawal symptoms. And he came to me as the nurse practitioner supervisor, and we like to joke about it. He told me, I say I was voluntold that I was going to go to Yale and learn what they did and bring it back to Tucson, Arizona. And so initially I was not a believer. We did travel to Yale in February of 2017 and talked to Dr. Grossman and the whole team there, who was just fabulous. And you started to realize it was just a culture, the way you work with these families. And we didn't have that culture in our unit. We had the wrong perspective about how to work with these families. And we thought that the babies needed to sleep in the crib, so we would give them medication to sleep in the crib, whereas they were like, no, you just hold the babies. Just pick them up when they're fussy. So that was kind of the beginning of my journey into this program.
Wonderful, wonderful. And yeah, I can definitely think about that mentality of like, the baby needs to be cared for every 3 hours and they need to sleep in between, so let's medicate them. So yeah.
Exactly.
And then Jocelyn, what kind of started your journey?
Yeah, so what really sparked my interest in working with our NAS population was a bit of a personal thing. So I started in the NICU, where Lisa and I work, in early 2016 as a new grad nurse. NICU was all I ever wanted to do. That was why I went to nursing school, and I was super happy to be there. And then later that year in 2016, I lost my oldest brother to a drug overdose. And I honestly had thoughts of leaving NICU to go work, you know, somewhere in addiction recovery and try to make an impact in that realm to make his death feel more meaningful or, you know, something like that. And Lisa came to me not knowing that was where my head was at the time, and said, we're going to start this program. This is what we're going to be doing with this population of babies for NAS. Is this something you want to work on with me? And I was like, absolutely. And that was kind of my sign that, like, this is where I was meant to be, and I can have this impact on addiction recovery and still stay in the NICU that I love. And so that was what kind of brought me down this path to work with this population.
That's wonderful. Very wonderful. I know I was telling you a little bit about, before we started recording, I was talking a little bit about my own change in mentality. About 10 years ago, we learned that my brother had a drug addiction, and he did eventually pass away last year. And, you know, these parents come in, and all I could think to myself was, people think this about my brother? I hope not. Like, he's just a person, just like anybody else. He just happens to have an addiction. So, yeah, I really think this is a great place to kind of start with that change in mentality within healthcare. Go ahead.
I was going to say, when we started this program, I think we all thought we were going to take care of the babies and we were going to make a difference with the babies. And then it was like, oh, well, to take care of the babies, you have to take care of the moms.
Yes.
And to take care of the moms, it was, you have to learn about addiction. And that's one of the biggest things that I feel like we've learned, is that addiction doesn't discriminate between race, gender. It affects everybody. It affects some of the smartest, most brilliant people I know. And there's so many different factors involved with it that we don't understand well, like the genetics of it. I often say, you know, if Jocelyn and I were both to take an OxyContin pill, it can make Jocelyn deathly ill. She'll throw up or feel ill. She'll throw up. She'll never want to touch it again. And I could take it and I could be like, this is amazing. I've never felt this great in my life. I want another one. I need another one now. And so a lot of our early journey was just learning about addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, I think we as a society need to kind of take a step forward and realize that addiction is not a shortcoming of a person. It's not a downfall. It is just something that happens.
Absolutely.
And it's,
yeah, we say that all the time. We say that in every talk and lecture we give, that addiction is not a moral flaw. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for nurses especially to realize that it does not matter what field of nursing you go into, you are going to work with people who are struggling with active addiction or are in recovery for addiction. And it's simply not covered in nursing school curriculum. And that's an important change that I think we need to attack as well is, you know, there's an old joke that psych is everywhere when you're, you know, in nursing school.
Yes.
But really addiction is everywhere. And you can't go into a single field of nursing without having to work with people who have addiction.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, I think people who think they're getting into the NICU and they're going to be free from psych, you're wrong. It's wrong.
Yeah.
Like, yes, there is psych all over the place within the NICU. You know, these parents are on a psychological roller coaster. We have addiction, you know, it's all over. It's everywhere. So I do believe, like, you're absolutely right. I think that addiction needs to be covered more on the academic level, so that we can have nurses that are just educated and, you know, understanding of what addiction is and how it affects people and families. Do you guys want to tell me about what exactly is your outreach program?
So our goal is to kind of connect with the mom as early as possible in the pregnancy, whenever she enters care. We are lucky in the sense that we have a dedicated OBGYN department connected to our hospital. So most of the women go through our Banner North facility and are seen by, we have an outpatient social worker there that connects with them and starts introducing the idea of, hey, we want you involved in your child's care. You know, we're going to count on you as part of the treatment. We want to see you here. And they've dedicated Tuesday afternoons to, they call it the Moms Clinic, Mothers Over Medicine. So all the moms can come in the same afternoon. All the staff is acutely aware that, you know, you need extra attention for these families and patients and things like being late. You know, if they're a little bit late, you just got to work with that. You can't reschedule them. You just take them, you know, because they're there and not this 5-minute rule that seems to apply to everyone. And so once they get in to meet with our social worker, at some point she spoon feeds information to them in bite-sized pieces, or if they show up at 38 weeks, she gives them all the information in one sitting, and she sets up a consultation with the neonatology team, which usually comes directly to me. And then I set up a time to, again, sit down and talk with these moms. If people like to do it virtually, we do it by the phone. We can do it by video. If they like to do it in person, we meet in person. We meet them where they want to be seen. And I go through, you know, again, all the expectations. This is what it's going to look like after birth. This is how it's going to be difficult. This is how we're going to work through it. And this is when you're going to go home. And then we want to follow them outpatient as well. And so we have a developmental follow-up clinic that we advertise and set up the appointment before they leave the hospital, because we want that continuity of before, during, and after delivery.
Okay. Do you have pediatricians that you specifically discharge babies to be followed?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So wherever the family wants to go is where the baby goes. We try to make phone calls to all the families just like a NICU discharge, a complex NICU patient that's been there for 3 months.
Right.
You call the pediatrician and say, hey, we're looking at this baby went through these different things. We like to call the pediatricians and say, hey, this baby was in the NICU for this. We discharged them at 5 days because mom was doing great and this was our criteria. The baby will still have these symptoms, but they're just going to get better with time. So okay. we've done a lot of education in the community.
Wonderful. That sounds really wonderful. I do think that, you know, my hospital has moved to Eat, Sleep, Console, and I think that we're still getting the majority of our parents that come in, they still think that we're like out to take their babies away. And I think the fact that you guys do some prenatal outreach is really wonderful because then the parents come in with the idea that the healthcare team's working with them. You know, I really yeah. can't even say how many times I've had to tell parents, like, we're not here to take your baby away. We know that the best place for your baby is with you, and this is how we're trying to work with you.
And part of our consult and what we cover prenatally is the role of DCS. In our state, it's DCS. Some states, it's CPS. But we cover that in the prenatal consult, so there's no surprises. They understand that it's a state law that we have to report any substance-exposed newborn, and we have a dedicated DCS liaison for our hospital, so we have that kind of one point of contact that we can also hook them up with our liaisons so that they can ask any questions that they might have, and DCS can answer their questions in kind of a general fashion. Obviously, they can't make any guarantees or speak to their specific case until it comes to light, but I think that's an important part of helping these families is that DCS angle and helping them understand exactly what that's going to look like. And, you know, not shrouding it in secrecy that we're in communication with DCS. It's just kind of being upfront that this is going to be part of the journey.
Right. Yeah, I think that's wonderful. When moms are still inpatient and they're with the babies, do they have access to getting methadone or whatever drug they're on to or whatever medication they're on to kind of stabilize themselves? Do they have access to that in the hospital?
When they're still a patient, they're dosed appropriately as they would be. Once they're discharged, it really kind of depends on the case. Some of our moms already have take-home dosing set up with their MAT facility, and in those cases, they'll usually go and get their take-home doses so that they can then come and kind of stay at the hospital while baby finishes up their stay. But it's just kind of a case-by-case basis, and sometimes even if they don't have take-home dosing already set up, we have really good relationships with our MAT providers around town, and we can make that call and see if we can get, you know, certain exceptions made for them to be able to have some take-home doses so that they don't have to leave daily. Sometimes they do, it's unavoidable, or, you know, they're either too early in their treatment or they just can't do take-home dosing. And in those cases, they do have to go and dose daily, but we make it clear to them that that's okay. That's what we want them to do. We'll take care of baby. You know, we've got your back. You can go and do what you need to do.
Okay. Wonderful. And great.
That's after the patient's discharged. Like while they're a patient, the hospital gives them their medication just like they would give them any other medication. And all of the medication assisted treatment facilities have an on-call number that the providers, and actually our pharmacy usually takes care of it, they call to verify the dose of methadone or the dose of buprenorphine that the mother is on. So that should all be occurring to remove some of those barriers for these moms.
Okay, wonderful. So now walk me through, once the baby is born, is there, like, kind of walk me through that. So the baby is born, we know that they're going to be Eat, Sleep, Console. Do you have a separate unit for babies that are Eat, Sleep, Console? Do they stay in a mom baby room? Can you kind of just like walk me through that and then talk a little bit about the actual scoring system itself?
Yeah. So everybody, I'll kind of talk about the flow, and then maybe Jocelyn can talk about the scoring system.
Yeah.
Every hospital and every institution is different, and you have to look at your setup and where your nurses are educated and where you're going to care for these families. You want everybody on board and on the same page so you're not bouncing families around. In our institution, they come in, they have a delivery, whether it's vaginal or C-section, and the goal is to keep the baby together with the mother as much as possible throughout the entire hospitalization. So if it's a vaginal delivery, they move over to postpartum within 2 to 3 hours. If it's a C-section, it's after their recovery, then they're on postpartum. In our institution, we actually still do Finnegan scoring on the postpartum unit. And then once they reach that threshold of the 3/8 or the 2/12 or the average, that they have, they need a higher level of care, then we do transfer them over to the NICU for that higher level of care, and we switch to Eat, Sleep, and Console. And at that point, we're working to get mom discharged so they can just come together as a unit, as a dyad. And when they get to the NICU, we get rid of the Finnegan scoring because we're not necessarily concerned with if they sneeze 6 times or if their skin is mottled. We want to look at Eat, Sleep, and Console. The tricks that you have to work with is every situation is highly individualized.
Yes.
And you've got to look at the situation and remove barriers. You know, if mom just had a C-section and baby's got high scores at 24 hours, mom can't get discharged. So we open that communication with the postpartum nurse. Hey, mom's going to be in NICU a lot of the time. Can you come over here and give her medications? Like, how much does she need to be back in her bed so we can make this work? And then I'll let Jocelyn talk about the Eat, Sleep, Console scoring.
Perfect. Yeah. So once we switch over to Eat, Sleep, and Console as our assessment piece, you know, that model of assessment is based on, you know, functional comfort of the infant. What does a newborn infant need to have quality of life? And so they've determined that they need to be able to eat, they need to be able to sleep, and they need to be able to be consoled if they become fussy. And so what that looks like for us is eating. They need to be able to eat a reasonable amount and not have their NAS symptoms interfere with that. And so in the early days when we're implementing this, that's about 1 ounce of formula, or to breastfeed well if mom is breastfeeding. Sleeping. They need to be able to sleep for at least 1 hour without NAS symptoms waking them up. And Lisa touched on this briefly. That does not have to be in the bed wrapped up by themselves to sleep. They can sleep while being held because that's what people do with babies. They hold them.
Yes.
And then
wait, what? People hold babies? Stop it.
Mind blown, right?
Yes.
The consoling piece is probably the one that gets the most attention if and when these babies do become fussy. First step is obviously meeting all of their, you know, normal baby needs. Are they fed? Are they clean and dry? And that sort of stuff. And if they're still fussy when all of those normal baby needs are met, it kind of becomes a game of timing. So our facility uses a time period of 10 minutes. Which feels like an absolute eternity when you're holding a crying baby.
Yes.
But, you know, we maximize our non-pharmacologic care during that 10-minute time. We use the 5 S's, the swaddling, sucking, side-lying, swaying. Did I miss one?
I feel like they were shushing. There you go.
I missed shushing. So we use that in the time period where we're trying to console them. And if after 10 minutes of trying to console the baby, you've been unsuccessful, it's time to hand the baby off to a second caregiver that's not completely frazzled. And that's the point at which we consider whether or not the baby's going to need a rescue dose of morphine. So these babies do get pharmacologic treatment if they tell us that they need it, in the case of being inconsolable for 10 minutes or more. The difference is that it's a one-time dose. It's a reset button to get them through that rough patch. And so they get what we call a rescue dose of morphine, and then we reassess and kind of go from there.
Okay. Yeah. With Eat, Sleep, Console, I really like the idea of handing the baby off to a second caregiver, because I can even remember with my own babies, you know, once they would get wound up, I would get a little wound up and it would just be like, okay, we're feeding off of each other. You need to go to somebody else. And then of course I would hand my baby off to somebody else and they would just do baby things. So as far as like discharge and stuff like that, what are you guys seeing as far as lengths of stay?
So we tell all parents that we need to watch the baby for 5 days, and that most of the babies go home in 5 or 6 days. There are some babies that go home longer. And if there are other things that need to be tended to, like phototherapy for hyperbilirubinemia, that we have to take that into consideration. So the the peak of the withdrawal is usually around day three or day four. Sometimes it's a little sooner and sometimes it's a little bit later. And so what we're looking for is us to get past that peak of withdrawal, and you notice the baby starts to get better because you can wrap them up and should put them in the crib for short periods of time and they'll sleep without having to be held to remain comfortable. And so we want to make sure we're at that phase. We're at a point where the family is comfortable taking them home, the medical team is comfortable with the family taking them home, and that the baby, we know all babies lose weight, but it's not a significant weight loss or continuing to lose weight, because with their high muscle tone, they will burn more calories and sometimes they need extra fortification. And if they're losing a lot of weight, we don't want to discharge them home and set that family up for failure. Because when they come back with a diagnosis of failure to thrive, it never looks good, but it especially doesn't look good for a family with substance use history. And so we really want to make sure we got everything lined up with good follow-up before we discharge them.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the change in the last 5 to 10 years, where we've gone from, moms who are using substances, we don't allow breastfeeding, to now we promote breastfeeding. How do you think that has has been incorporated well into Eat, Sleep, Console? And I feel like we are seeing babies go home a lot sooner, not only with Eat, Sleep, Console, but also like breastfeeding, and they're tolerating feeds better. What kind of have you guys seen as far as like breastfeeding rates and stuff like that?
Yeah, we absolutely promote breastfeeding for our moms. Our policy is that as long as mom is negative for anything that she is not prescribed, that she can breastfeed, and we support that and promote it absolutely.
Yes, it's a complicated issue. So anything mom is prescribed for is generally okay with breastfeeding. Most of the time, the obstetricians have checked that for it's something that's safe during pregnancy, and we can always double check it for breastfeeding as well. If they have a prescription for something, it's generally okay, and we'll double check it. The one exception I would say is THC, and the American Academy of Pediatrics has a good statement on that, a policy statement, that recommends when you have a mom positive for THC, you educate them on the potential harm that can occur to the infant and advise them to stop or to abstain using THC, whether it's edibles or smoking or any form. And mm-hmm. if they agree to that, then it generally is okay to use the breast milk.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And then you were talking about you have a follow-up clinic. What happens in the follow-up clinic? What does that care look like?
We try and schedule them for the first available appointment, and our follow-up clinic is pretty full. And so it's actually out, 3 to 4, sometimes 5 months from the time of discharge. The nurse practitioner at the follow-up clinic, I happen to be a neonatal nurse practitioner that moved over there and received that training. So she's familiar with NICU infants, and she examines them and does developmental exams. So the first couple exams, I think around 3 months, is the TEMP. And I'm going to have to look up what that says.
Okay.
That's TIMP exam. It's something infant motor performance. And then when infants are older, closer to 9 months, she does a Bayley scoring developmental exam on them.
Okay.
In addition to her doing developmental assessments on the infant, we have physical therapy there at the clinic. And so they can work with the family if there's still high muscle tone, if the baby has a preferential head side turning, and work with muscular stretching and positioning to help overcome some of those things.
Okay. That sounds wonderful. What kind of feedback have you received from families? I know some of the families that I've taken care of, they might have older kids where they were in the hospital with their older children before Eat, Sleep, Console. And then when we sit down and we explain to them about Eat, Sleep, Console, and we're not here to take your baby away, we're here to work with you, they seem a lot more at ease with healthcare providers. So what are you kind of seeing with families as a change and a shift from being admitted and the eat, sleep, console process through discharge?
Yeah, we definitely, given that we've been doing this for, I think, a little over 5 years now, we have had return customers, if you will. We've had moms that have come through the program more than once now, which is, you know, a testimony in and of itself that they had a good experience the first time and they want to do it again. We have had a fair number of moms who have older children that were also substance exposed at the time of delivery and had neonatal abstinence syndrome, whether it was with us, you know, in our olden days or with a different facility that's still kind of operating with more of a scheduled morphine approach. And we get a lot of positive feedback, you know, during those experiences that this is completely different than what I dealt with my other child. And, you know, it's always nice to see the families come back for, you know, a second round to work with them again.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a grandmother who took, custody of her first grandchild, and the baby was actually at a different hospital in Tucson and received the traditional through 3 weeks of weaning of medication and then went home. And then, her second grandchild was born, and she also, you know, the mother identified that she'd like the grandma to take the baby again. And so we had actually already started the baby on scheduled morphine. And once grandma and family was available, we did a rapid wean and then had grandma and family stay for, 5 days afterwards, I think 4 to 5 days. And she took that baby home, and she said he was way easier than the granddaughter who had been weaned over 3 weeks off medication. She's like, hands down, way easier. Now, it is her second time, so she's a little more versed in what to expect. But a lot of times people ask me, how do you know that these families aren't going to take their baby home and shake the baby, because the baby's still having some withdrawal symptoms? Their withdrawal is not gone at day 5 or day 6. It's just that it's getting better. And I actually argue that these families are more prepared to take their infant home. They have stayed in the hospital with that baby from birth. They develop those skills in the hospital. They know exactly what to do for their baby and how to get the baby, you know, to stop crying and to console and how to feed, versus the baby who has been weaned over several weeks and the family is not able to come a lot for transportation issues, or they have to go back to work. But then they show up on day 21 and pick up this baby and take it home, and they don't have those skills developed. So I actually think we're setting them up for better success by having them stay in the shorter period of time.
Right. I mean, you talk about the tools to be able to comfort a baby. And you're right, the 5 to 6 days in the hospital, it's spent with people supporting them and teaching them how to use the 5 S's. You know, I was 19 when I took my first baby home, and she was uncomplicated. And I can remember standing there just like not knowing what to do with her. And this was your standard baby. And just, I think the more tools that we can give any family, the better off they're going to be. And I think with Eat, Sleep, Console, I don't think it had ever crossed my mind that these parents were going to take the baby home and shake it, because we're watching, you know, we see how they manage the baby here in the hospital, and we can see when a parent gets frustrated, and we can say, you know, this is time to hand the baby over to someone else, another caregiver. When you start feeling like this, it's time to hand the baby off. You know, you've tried the 5 S's. You're obviously like level 10 frustrated. Call for help, and that's okay. You know, I think it definitely prepares parents just a little bit better, you know, to have.
Yeah, and we have in the prenatal piece, we do have the pediatrician that created the 5 S's, Dr. Harvey Karp. We have gone, several of us in the Banner system have gone through the certification process to be certified happiest baby educators. And so we do virtual courses to teach the 5 S's and to teach all about the happiest baby kind of mentality, if you will. And we try to do that prenatally, because teaching somebody the five S's when they're still pregnant is obviously better than teaching somebody the five S's while the baby is screaming. Yes. And you're trying to teach them the tools to calm them at the time. So that's another, part of the prenatal piece that we try to bring in, is teaching them those things ahead of time, so that they at least have they may not always remember when the time comes, or they may be frazzled when the baby's crying, but at least they have that foundation for those non-pharmacologic tools that we've given them.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. And I want to say that when I checked, it was about 7 years ago, I remember hearing that the Pennsylvania WIC department mandated that parents actually be educated on the happiest baby on the block. Like, they had to watch this video as part of getting WIC, so that parents knew how to soothe their babies. And I saw Dr. Harvey Karp at a conference several years ago, and I ended up buying the DVD, and I was like, this is great. Where was this when I had my first baby?
Yeah. And it's something that was designed for all newborns, and it wasn't necessarily something that was designed for infants with withdrawal, but it gives you such concrete tools that you can do and apply, and it works. And, you said something that triggered a couple thoughts. When I had my first child, it was after being a NICU nurse for a number of years. And I thought, I've got this. I'm a NICU nurse. I know what I'm doing. And I completely got worked over by my first infant, who was not substance exposed. But if you looked at him, he arched, he screamed, he cried, he shook and jittered. Mm-hmm. And if you were to score him on the Finnegan scoring tool, he would probably score over an 8.
Right.
I finally, at 2 months, the pediatrician helped me diagnose that he did have some reflux, and we got him on meds, and he was a different baby. But when we educate nurses on scoring and looking at these babies, I think they're put under a different lens, just because we know this history of substance exposure. And we tend to, with this microscope, we give them, points against them for every little thing they do. And, as a novice new mom, I thought all babies were supposed to sleep in the crib for 3 hours between feedings. Well, those are the premature infants. That's not your normal newborn. We don't see normal newborns in the NICU. And so you have to readjust your thought. Is this something that a normal baby would do?
Yeah.
If it's something a normal baby would do, don't score it. You don't have to count it. So.
Yeah, I definitely, I do think that we look at abstinence, neonatal abstinence babies under a different lens, for sure. And I know, I'm in nurse practitioner school now, and I know at my clinical site, I went to examine a baby, and she was doing normal baby things. I changed her diaper. She screamed her head off when I wiped her bottom. That's normal. I'm wiping you with a cold wipe. You should be angry at me for that. So, and I know the bedside nurse was like, oh, well, she's like off the chain with a diaper change and with temperatures. And I'm like, here, let me stick a cold pole in your armpit and wipe your bottom with a cold wipe. You would be off the chain too.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
So I definitely think that we have to look at some of these things are just normal baby things. And, I think Eat, Sleep, Console takes some of that lens away. It takes that microscope away, which I definitely, I think it's much better for babies, just as an opinion. So.
Yeah. And it was a really hard shift from, looking at symptoms, using the Finnegan scoring, moving over to the Eat, Sleep, Console. I don't know how many times I would have nurses say, they're still sneezing. And I'm like, oh, okay, but that's not part of the assessment at this point. So duly noted. But if it's not interfering, I don't know how many times I said this either, if it's not interfering with their ability to eat, sleep, or be consoled, we're not gonna put weight in it. We're not gonna worry about it.
Yeah. I know, even for myself as a bedside nurse, I know it's like, I would observe these things that we used to score, and I would have to be like, okay, that's not part of it. This baby is fine when I pick them up and I'm holding them. And my daughter actually and I, we've recorded some books that she likes to read. And so I'm like, okay, we're going to sit, we're going to listen to some books on audio, and we're going to see how you do. you know, and it is, it's hard to like remove that from your brain. Like, yes, this baby startles when I unwrap them, and, or they have an exaggerated startle. They spit up a little bit after feeds, but like, who's to say that this baby would have retained that food had they not been substance exposed? Some babies just spit up. So I agree with you. I think it has been pretty difficult. It was like a hard left. So I think we all just needed to get used to it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and I'll go out and say this. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this. Some of the best NICU nurses and best newborn nurses are the hardest to transition because they are so good at what they do. And I think once you see that transition and it kind of clicks, like, oh, I don't have to focus on these other symptoms. I will tell you that nursing is the key component that makes the difference for these babies and for these families. You can get a nurse who just knows how to work with them, and it makes a world of difference. It puts the families at ease. They feel comfortable. They feel less judged. They're more successful. They're able to keep the baby happier. Whereas you have, you know, maybe a nurse that's less experienced or for whatever reason keeps sticking to the Finnegan tools, because that's what we were taught and that's what we're good at, it's more difficult stuff. So nursing absolutely is the key to success for us, with our families and our babies. It's nursing, hands down. The medical team can come in and say, okay, yep, baby's cried for 10 minutes, let's do a dose of morphine. Mm-hmm. But it's really nursing, I think.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I think that just kind of impresses the importance of really that bedside care for these babies and families. It is so important. I know. I just, like I said, it just hard left. And I think that it makes such a big difference for the outcomes and of these families and like even their own bonding with their baby, you know, kind of going back to, you were saying there used to be a 21-day wean process for these babies. And if the parents weren't there, they weren't bonding with the babies. And I feel like all moms, they feel guilty about whatever it is that we find it to be guilty about. It's just a symptom of being a mom. And I think that sometimes these moms who have used substances and are now on their own programs, I think they feel guilty about this. I see it a lot. I know they feel guilty that their baby is here and in this situation. And I feel like Eat, Sleep, Console gives moms tools to feel like they're helping their babies. And it removes some of that guilt.
Right. Hands down. That's what Dr. Grossman talks about, you know, in his 2017 article, is the empowerment of the parents. And they feel horribly guilty. Horrible about it. And for us to come in and look at them like, you did this to your baby, is just, you know, exponentiates that feeling. But to give them the tools and to tell them, you are going to be the treatment, you're going to be part of the treatment, we're going to work with you, we're going to collaborate. Mm-hmm. Those moms, you know, we have moms that come in and they just found out they were pregnant, you know, a month or two ago, and they don't even know how to change a diaper. And by day 5 or day 6, you know, I go in and the baby cries and I'm like, oh, do you need me to help? And they're like, no, I got this. You know, I'm like, they put their hand up and tell me, stop.
But that's the best. I think that's the best. Like, I love getting parents to, you know, I'm asked a lot, like, what is your favorite part of NICU? You know, what has made you want to advance your career? And it's that right there, that like, I don't need you. I'm like, okay, so like, we've gone from like, you need us to like, I don't need you. And like, that's what it's about.
That's the best feeling in the world. And it makes me know that they are the best one to take their child home.
Yes.
You know, and whereas before we started this whole program, you would discharge babies and you'd be really nervous. Like, I just don't know. I just don't have that feeling because I haven't had that contact and seen that parent do amazing things.
Yeah,
and the empowerment piece, I think the empowerment piece is huge. And I think that the majority of these moms and the parents in general, even sometimes the dads, they've been through withdrawal. They've had to detox. And for them to be the source of the treatment for not having the baby experience that and go through, you know, feeling really lousy, a feeling that they're oh so familiar with, and you never forget it if you felt it.
Yeah.
There's nothing more empowering than that. They get to prevent that for the baby, and it's so important.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny because like we talk about these things, and of course I get these little mini flashbacks of like talking to parents where they're like, I've had parents ask me, you know, what is withdrawal like for a baby? And all I can say is I assume that it's the same as it was for you. But like, imagine being hugged by your mom through that.
Yeah. Look.
Is there anything else that you guys would like to kind of add?
I think, you know, I look back on my career, my 20 career in the NICU, and I've said some things that I really wish I could take back to these families. And so I don't want people to think that we're perfect in this and that we've always been non-judgmental, because I haven't been. It was a journey for me to learn and make that transition and that change. And I think education is your best tool to learn how to work with families, and just practice. The families, when you're apprehensive about talking to them about their substance use, they feel it and it just becomes more awkward. And mm-hmm. I finally got to a place where I can go right in. I'm like, okay, so how much fentanyl are you taking? How about heroin? Is it IV? Are you smoking it? You know, and it's frank and it's easy, and they just spew out information. And I've had the social worker's like, well, they didn't tell me that. And I think it's just, it's like any skill you develop in the NICU, you have to practice it and it gets better with time.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I worked in labor and delivery for a little while. And yeah, when you approach somebody and you are non-judgmental and you can just say, listen, we're here to help you. You know, are you, you know, what are you taking? 9 times out of 10, I've had patients just be honest with me. And again, like, I have not always been perfect. It took having my own experience for me to really shift my own mentality. You know, when you're taking care of a patient and you're thinking about your loved one, you're like, oh my gosh, did people think that about my loved one? Like, yeah, it does. That non-judgmental approach is really just going to be best for the patient. It's going to be best for these babies.
Yeah. And I think a big takeaway piece for, you know, nurses in general, especially newer nurses, regardless of what field of nursing you're in, is that we should never, you know, fall into complacency of doing things the way we've always done them, because that's the way we've always done them. Because the ways that we've treated these infants for the last 40 years is what we did, because that was what we had. But I think when you know better, you do better. And we just needed someone, and in this case it was Dr. Matt Grossman, to kind of take that leap into doing things differently. And so I would challenge everyone to, you know, not just continue doing things the way we do them because it's how we do it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And not just about our NAS babies, but about all things with our babies, all patients in all fields. So I want to thank you guys for joining me today and, you know, kind of talking with our listeners. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.